Rabbi Levi Yitzchak of Berdichev told the following story. There was once a beloved king whose court musicians played beautiful music for him. The king loved the music, and the musicians loved to play for him. Every day for many years, the musicians played with passion and joy, and the king and the musicians developed a deep love for one another. But eventually, after years of dedicated service, all the musicians died. Their children were called into the king's court and were asked to take their parents' place. Out of loyalty to their parents, the children came to play each morning. But unlike their parents, the children did not like the music. While they could play the basic tunes, they didn't understand the hidden power of the instruments, and they played with little enthusiasm. Their resentment grew each day as they played. And each day, the king also became more and more frustrated, as much by their dismissive attitude as by their cacophony. But after some time, a few of these children developed a renewed interest in playing for the king. They realized that playing beautiful music was not simply a way to connect with the king and bring him joy, but they found that making the music kindled a fire inside of them that they had never before experienced. So these children set out to remember what their parents had known so well. They began to experiment with sound. They composed new melodies. They rediscovered harmony. And they produced a music inspired by their own sense of love and devotion. The king witnessed their efforts and was deeply moved. Their music was different than their parents, but like them, it came from a place deep within, from a compelling need to give of their spirit to each other and to him. Now, we each connect to Judaism, to Jewish life, in our own ways. The music that we bring into the symphony of our community may not be the same as our ancestors, and we may be playing for entirely different reasons. Some of us, we feel the music of Jewish life deep in our souls, and we've been playing for our entire lives, and others have just begun listening. In this community, we have people whose faith is never faulting and their belief in God is strong. We have others for whom culture, history, language, and music is the glue that holds their Jewish soul together. The echo of the Judaism of previous generations, those ancient stories and those powerful traditions, the Judaism that has held on for thousands of years, this is still reverberating. We are in a very different place, but hopefully we can open up our hearts and our souls and our minds enough to catch the melody. Now, as we gather on this holy day, we know that our Jewish community and our individual Jewish identities is vastly different than past generations. Today, being Jewish is above all a choice. No matter how you were born and raised, no one is under any obligation to remain Jewish. And where in past generations, Judaism found you, today's Jews have to find Judaism. We hold on to so many different identities, and we are often pulled in so many different directions. And because of this, Judaism and Jewish community has to be compelling enough to hold our attention. And of course, synagogues like ours like to say, rightfully so, that we have doors that are open to all. But we also have to create an interesting enough product so that people will want to be involved in the first place. It's really an amazingly different world. Yet there is an additional challenge that we encounter during these high holy days, during this time of year. And we are stuck in the middle of an amazing clash of values, the universal and the particular nature of our identity as Jews. In these holy days, we gather together in services, sitting here in community, to participate in what is one of the most universal acts, to reflect on how we can improve ourselves in the world. Yet we do so in the most Jewish of ways. We chant in Hebrew, we read the stories of the Jewish people, and we direct our prayers to the God of Israel. We're caught between the most universal values that we hold as human beings and the particular connections and needs that we have as members or people with connection to a Jewish community. Rabbi Sidney Schwartz, who has written extensively on the changes in the Jewish community and in people's identity, describes the major differences, divisions of American Jewish life between tribal Jews and covenantal Jews. Now, in this definition, the tribal Jews see their identity in political and ethnic terms. They're proud to see themselves as distinct from other cultures and ethnicities, and often support Israel because it is the most public manifestation of Jewish people's existence and survival. Covenantal Jews, on the other hand, still hold a sense of pride in being Jewish, yet connect primarily to Judaism through ethics and values, the values of Jewish tradition, social justice, compassion, and caring for the most vulnerable. As Jews, they feel an obligation to care for all people, and any claims of chosenness or privilege of Jews over others might be a bit problematic. Questions of intermarriage, Jewish continuity, or funding Jewish organizations are not as important as the universal ideas of supporting others. Now, I would assume that if we think of our own identities, there are times when we all feel that deepest of tribal connections, and others when those universal values, the covenantal values, hold sway. Rabbi Shlomo Carlbach, Zichrono Livracha, one of the greatest Jewish musicians of recent history, actually got his start as one of the shlichim, the emissaries of the Chabad Rebbe. And he would spend much of his time traveling around the country, getting people to enjoy being Jewish. And he visited many college campuses. In the final years of his life, he talked about these experiences. And he said, "When I visit college campuses, I ask people who they are. If someone says, 'I'm a Catholic,' then I know that's a Catholic. If someone says, 'I'm a Protestant,' then I know that's a Protestant. If someone says, 'I'm just a human being,' then I know that's a Jew." And it is a funny statement to hear, but when I hear this, I am a bit unsettled. Now, I know what Reb Shlomo experienced is still probably true for so many of us. I do feel a deep sense of pride that Jews feel so deeply connected with the needs of others outside of their communities, that our desire to help and care for all people is not just an obligation, but it is an inherent part of our identity. But without that particular connection to the Jewish people, to Jewish peoplehood, I'm also worried. Saying "I am Jewish" should be something that's said as easily and with pride, and can mean I care for everyone, but I know that I do this the way I do because I am Jewish. These high holidays are in many ways the epitome of this mix of universal and particular in our nature. While today we come together as Jews for a very unique and particular set of rituals and prayers, so much of what we do is about who we are as universal people. The prayers for forgiveness, Al Chet, which we just did, and Unetane Tokef, are mostly lacking in reference to specific Jewish commandments. We recognize we've missed the mark when hurting others, misusing our words, causing pain in our relationships. But there are no Al Chets for breaking Shabbat or eating non-kosher food or forgetting to put on our tefillin every day. We sit here reenacting our experiences through liturgy, song, and movement in the most Jewish of ways. But what we are speaking is actually very universal. As we say these words, we announce in ways the ways we are meant to be in the world, but in a powerful way, the way we act out these values Jewishly, that's up to us. In the Unetane Tokef prayer, one of the most powerful and for some the most problematic prayers of our liturgy, we're told that on Rosh Hashanah it's written, and on Yom Kippur it is sealed. How many pass on? How many shall thrive? Who shall live and who shall die? Who by the sword? Who by the beast? Who in peace? Who is uprooted? This can, of course, be seen as a theological statement that God controls our fate, and that our path, our joy, our suffering is determined by someone or something outside of ourselves. In so many of our minds, this is a very challenging way to understand the experiences of our lives. Yet beyond the theological issues, this prayer does something possibly better than any other piece of liturgy that we have. In the most clear and powerful way, it says that no matter who you are, we have to remember that we are all in this together. Our fates as individuals and as Jews, all the pain and suffering we experience in our lives, is bound up with the fates of all people. This is exactly what we read in the liturgy. All of humanity is founded on dust. Of dust they are made, and dust they shall return. As long as they live, they strive for their bread. Like vessels of clay, they can break. Like grass, they can wither. Like flowers, they can fade. Yet remember, too, that Yom Kippur, today, is considered by our tradition as one of the deepest holidays of joy. We didn't start our service tonight with words of dread or fear. Instead, we greet the Torahs with that beautiful song of hope, Or Zarua Latzadik Uyishre Lev Simcha. Light is sown for the righteous, joy for the upright of heart. The Talmud tells us, atonement and joy go well together. And the Zohar, the well-known mystical medieval text, says even stronger, Yom HaKippurim Hu Yom Kippurim. Yom Kippur is a day like Purim, a day of joy, celebration, gladness, maybe even a bit of silliness. Although I'm sure by tomorrow evening it won't feel that way. Now, even many of the rituals of today, the wearing of white, the fasting and confession, are duplicated in the Jewish wedding ceremony, an obvious time of happiness. This joy comes on a day when we are able to bring together our whole selves, our Jewish souls, our Jewish identities, and our identities as members of the human community. When we can be Jewish and when we can be just a person, then we are living the highest of Jewish values. And then there definitely is something to be happy about. There's another piece of our liturgy, which we don't see that often these days. A poem, a medieval piyut from the Rosh Hashanah service. V'ye'atayu kol avdecha. And everyone will serve you. Which in many Reform synagogues, and just a few left today, used to end the service with a very upbeat melody with these powerful words. And it was usually translated into the wonderful King's English, and it also conveniently makes a nice rhyme. All the world shall come to serve thee and bless thy glorious name, and thy name triumphant the islands shall acclaim. With the coming of thy kingdom, the hills shall break into song, and the islands laugh exultant that they to God belong. And all their congregations so loud praise they shall sing, that the uttermost people's hearing shall hail thee, crowned king. Now, beyond the gendered language and the symbolic idea of king, which we cannot separate from the traditional themes of this day, there is something profoundly universal and profoundly Jewish about this poem. Yes, on the one hand, this is a prayer of hope that all cultures, all faiths, will serve the one God, the Jewish God. But it's also a prayer that raises up the simple idea that God needs us. The world needs us. We need each other just as we need God. The fact that we are dependent on each other, not just Jews, but the entire world, is so profound that the hills are singing and the islands are even laughing. This is a prayer of hope, a prayer that reminds us of our obligations to the world. Even for those who can't fully connect with the ideas of crowning God king, at least in the ways that our ancestors may have thought of this, we can still do our part to crown God. We crown God when we bring godliness into the world, when we live the highest ethical values of our tradition, when we act in godly ways, in holy and ethical ways. We say that these are the values that should rule over the world. Symbolically, we also choose God, we also crown God, when we stay connected with our faith and with our culture and with each other. While some may not need God, and some might say that they don't believe in God, in this understanding says that God still needs us. Now, the past few months have brought out a new discussion of the role that our Jewish identity has in our lives, and the question of whether the Jewish community can any longer have a sense of communal obligation, a tribal identity, and still remain a Jewish people and a universal people. As we were confronted with the war in Israel just a few months ago, and now with the renewed fight against ISIS and ever-growing anti-Semitism in Europe, so many of us are asking ourselves what it means to be Jews and members of a Jewish community, and how our identity is perceived by others. In a more connected world, all of our identities are under the microscope, and our identities as Jews are often the first to be examined. The conflict in Israel, more so than any other events in the past few years, seems to have inspired all of us, many of us, to ask in the deepest ways, what does it mean to be Jewish? Back in 1948, as the devastation of the Jews in Europe became known, Simon Rodidowitz wrote an essay called Am HaHolech VaMet, Israel, the Ever-Dying People. An essay which is especially telling today. In it, he states what, for better or for worse, was one of the most powerful connectors of the Jewish people of the past. He said, "The world has many images of Israel, but Israel has only one image of itself, that of an expiring people, forever on the verge of ceasing to be. One who studies history will readily discover that there was hardly a generation in the diaspora which did not consider itself the final link in Israel's chain. Each always saw before it the abyss ready to swallow it up. Often it seems that the overwhelming majority of our people go about driven by the panic of being the last." But this cannot be enough reason to remain Jewish. In a previous generation, parents would tell their kids when they were asked why they had to be Jewish or why they had to go to Hebrew school or have a bar bat mitzvah. But these parents would say that they had to stay Jewish, otherwise Hitler would have won. And when these memories were still fresh in our minds, when fear of annihilation was still possible, this reason still held some sway. Even during the Six-Day War of 1967, Jews stood around their televisions and listening to their radios in very real fear that Israel and Jews would once again be wiped off the face of the earth. But thankfully, Israel not only survived, but it showed its strength, and it gave the Jews a sense of deep pride and reassurance that with Israel on the map, if nothing else, the destruction of the Jewish people would not happen again. Now, it could be argued that the Jewish people have not faced such a fear since the War of 67, and this may be true, but even more importantly, the Jewish community is not connected with a shared voice as much as it was in the past. The recent conflict in Israel brought this truth to light in a very real way. No matter where you stood in your views about Israel or the conflict, it was much more difficult to find a single united force this time. Yes, the conflict was a much more challenging one to sort through. But I think the underlying feeling that many Jews had on all sides was they wanted the conflict to be a uniting force for the Jewish community, for, against, supporting Israel, supporting peace. But at the risk of oversimplifying the situation, this time around, Israel may have had the military might, but it didn't have the power to bring the Jewish people together. And now that the situation in Israel has calmed down a bit, what are we left with? We still have a Europe with rising anti-Semitism where once again people are filling the streets and saying death to the Jews. We have many Jewish communities still being threatened with violence and eventual disappearance. This is, of course, in addition to the ethnic violence, the wars and sickness that have become commonplace in our world. And for us Jews then, what will it take to hold our community together? What will it take to give us that deep sense of pride, both the tribal pride of roots and ethnic identity, and also the universal, the covenantal pride, where we can still be a light unto the nations by bringing peace not just to us, but to all the world. This pride can no longer come from the fear of the end of the Jewish people any more than it can come from believing that all Jews are the same. Today, we do need to accept some simple truths about what it means to be Jewish and what we need to do to build Jewish community. We accept that Jews have many identities, that being Jewish may only be one of many layers of who we are. We accept the diversity of our Jewish family, interfaith families, people with different gender identities, political views, cultural backgrounds, and histories. And this acceptance should bring us to a place of great joy and of strength and pride from the wealth of learning and of spirit that we encounter when we share our unique stories. We have to then build communities that give Jews what they need to make Judaism stay alive, meaningful, and connected to all of these different identities, which we have the freedom to hold in the contemporary world. We have to see Judaism as a true civilization, as Rabbi Mordechai Kaplan would have it, where our Jewish selves can be quenched from the deepest wells of Jewish life and culture. We have to provide opportunities for serious Jewish learning, where those sparks of Jewish knowledge and pride in all of us can grow into flames that can warm the Jewish soul into the future. Programs such as our amazing Melton School, which, by the way, there's a few more days to sign up, and it's a wonderful program. This is where diverse groups of adults learn and grow together as they discover the blessings of learning in Jewish community. And our vision for a revamped Hebrew school program, where students can learn, can choose which paths to learn about Jewish tradition based on their interests and passions, instead of only being told by their teachers or curriculum what and how they are to learn. More social groups and gatherings, more opportunities for leadership and programs that promote not just Jewish literacy or practice, but they give us all the tools to develop a meaningful Jewish life. Everyone in our community, and that means each and every one of you, should feel a sense of ownership, not only of your Jewish community, but of your own Jewish choices. But I hope that you don't walk away from this task, because no matter how you connect Jewishly, a Jewish connection means an obligation to be a part of, to help build the Jewish future. We need to talk to each other, to our children and future generations, about what it means to be Jewish, even if we are not totally sure ourselves. What this process of tshuva that we work towards on this holy day asks us to do is to look back, look beyond ourselves, beyond our beliefs, our practices, our fears, and our challenges, in how we are Jewish, to our ancestors and to the deepest source of our cultural heritage and traditions. If we were to think back, if we were to ask our great-grandparents or all those who came before us why they were Jewish, what would they say? Would they say it was because they were inspired by prayer or wonderful Shabbat services? They might. Would they say it was their belief or non-belief in God? Would they say it was because of Israel? I have a feeling that they would say, above all, being Jewish is simply who they are, a way of being, a way of existing in the world, and a way of bringing meaning to their lives. And they knew that they could not leave it to others to make Judaism strong. And maybe that is what we're moving towards tonight, a way of being Jewish that is beyond identity, beyond history and beyond faith, and even beyond politics. It's returning to a Jewish self that fills us with pride and a knowledge that Judaism, Jewish people, each and every one of us, is worth the thousands of years of Jewish history that came before today. Theodor Bekel, the folk singer and actor, when asked to describe why he was Jewish, answered with a poem by Yosef Papernikov. Soll sein, als ich boi und der Luft meine Schlösser, soll sein, als mein Gott ist im Ganzen nicht to. In Träum ist mir heller, in Träum ist mir besser, in Träum ist der Himmel go bläuer wie bläu. Could it be that my whole world is only confusion? Could it be what I thought was God's word isn't true? Yet my dream is as bright as the brightest illusion, and the sky in my dream is much bluer than blue. Could it be that I'll not see the fruit of my yearning? Could it be that I'll never rid of my load? What matters is not the end of the journey. It's the journey itself on a bright sunlit road. And Bekele concludes his essay by saying, "I make no claim that Jewish culture is superior to other cultures or that Jewish song is superior to the song of my neighbor, but it is mine. And since it is the song of my people, it is up to me to cultivate it, lest it become desolate and the blooms wither and die." It is up to us to keep Judaism alive, to keep the flowers blooming. And this can't happen without a serious examination of who we are and how we can each do our part to make Judaism relevant, meaningful, and how we can make it ours. It's in how we choose to learn about our past and our traditions, and how we choose to teach others and to pass it on to the next generation. It's in the rituals we do and how we relate to people who are most different than us. It's more in what we do believe than what we don't, and in how we act on these beliefs. The world needs us now more than ever, but so does Judaism. May we all stand with pride, along with our ancestors and all Jews around the world, knowing that what makes us good people, what makes us the best that we can be as members of the human family, is what makes us Jewish. And what makes us Jewish is what makes us strong.